Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School and the clinic director at the Premier Center in Santa Monica, where he treats many famous names in Hollywood under nationally recognized Premier Labs owner and CEO Dr. Robert Marshall. Got a health question? Ask Dr. Medici live today on Straight Talk on Health. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. I am Dr. Vincent Medici, and my friends, you're going to have to really reach deep today to get this one. This show is a little different. This show is about tribes, people who live today using computers and doing all the things that modern man does, and yet they still resonate with their genetic intelligence of thousands and thousands of years ago. Now, irregardless of your worldview, we all have to admit that we were around 5,000-6,000 years ago in a completely different ecosystem. And we all have to admit that we weren't put here originally as farmers. That there was, at some point in world history, hunter-gatherers. Well, the statement today, the concept I want to give to you, and you're going to have to reach into you to see how much of you resonates with this. But what I want to give to you today is that I am certain, as are many others, and I'll make some, I hope, outstanding arguments today. But I am certain, from watching you, my patients, clients, so on and so forth, come into my office for a couple of decades, I'm certain that people are out there today, stuffed into little cubicles, under fluorescent lights, suffering needlessly, hammering themselves with great effort to try to keep up with everybody else. And your genetic expression is very different than the lifestyle you're imposing on yourself. I'm going to shift now. And if you're by a computer, even better yet, go to a site. Just Google up the word Göbekli Tepe. G-O-B-E-K-L-I-T-E-P-E, Göbekli Tepe. Göbekli Tepe is the Turkish Stonehenge. Stonehenge. We all know Stonehenge. A good 25% of us, well, maybe not that much, but a high percentage of us emigrated here from England, Ireland, Wales, Scotland, a long time ago. And in southern England, in Wiltshire, is, of course, the megalith Stonehenge. We estimate that Stonehenge was resurrected sometime about 3000 BC, Stonehenge 1, that is. And these were not unsophisticated people that did this. From the standpoint of architecture, the skill required to put up Stonehenge, let alone whatever it was there for, they think it was a site to study the heavens, to study the stars. But irregardless of what it was, who constructed it, is one simple fact that no one argues. It's a complicated, technologically advanced structure that went up around 3000 BC. Well, in 1994, the world split open. It really did, but nobody told you. And that's typical of great discovery. In 1994, a sheep herder in Turkey, that's right, Turkey, in the Middle East, Turkey part of the European Commonwealth, Turkey today with a powerful economy, in Turkey, some sheep herder saw some stones sticking up out in the middle of absolutely nowhere, ended up contacting the German Archaeological Institute, the German Archaeological Institute in Istanbul, Turkey. And in 1994, a man named Klaus Schmidt, an archaeologist, says, and I quote him, "As soon as I got there to the site and saw the stones, I knew that I, the archaeologist, that if I didn't walk away immediately, I would be there for the rest of my life." Wonderful moment. Klaus Schmidt knew in that moment that something was about to change. Something was going to impact history. And now I want you, in your spare time or now, to get on nationalgeographic.com or smithsonian.com. Both of them. And I want you to research publications about Göbekli Tepe. Again, G-O-B-E-K-L-I-T-E-P-E. Because in both these publications, as well as in the most credentialed universities across the world today, there is a massive consensus that Göbekli Tepe was built 11,000 years ago. That's about 9,000 B.C. And it's infinitely larger than Stonehenge. It is much, 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 much bigger. And no one knows who built it. Nobody knows what it means. And yeah, there's not total unanimity. But there is massive consensus. And it is not fringe. It's not those people that think aliens have invaded. It's not the National Enquirer. It's Stanford and Harvard and high-end credentialed archaeologists who, off carbon dating and other things, are dating the site 11,000 years ago. National Geographic and the Smithsonian are not going to publish and make blatant statements like this unless they've backed it up. They have too much to risk. In other words, this is not a guess or a joke. But what's relevant to you is that Göbekli Tepe was built by hunter-gatherers. That's the conjecture. It's even more than conjecture. So shrouded in mystery in terms of what it is, why it went up, why there's really no settlements around it, why we only find the bones of animals there, amidst all this mystery. From everything we know, in 9,000 B.C., we were hunting and gathering fruits and nuts and berries and seeds. We weren't farming. This is a pre-agrarian time frame. And then the anthropologists and archaeologists start to speculate as to why this was built. So we look at Stonehenge. We look at some of the world's great megaliths dating back now in controversy. We have monuments in Bolivia, in the Middle East, in India. Many of those dates are being challenged today on multiple levels. But the point is, someone back then, before we began to farm, was trying to reach out to the sky. Perhaps ignorant, perhaps innocent, however you want to look at them. They were trying to understand their world. But putting up megalithic structures that they should not have had the technology to build is very curious. And what it gives us is a little bit more insight into the same genes, the same genetics that live strong in many of you today. Because we've replaced this hunter-gatherer mentality, and I'm going to get into that later, but we've replaced this hunter-gatherer tribal, savage, beastly, unnecessarily cruel, right? The savage tribe of the Amazon, the savage of the American Indian. And yes, a lot of this is dying out. 100 years ago, we may have thought of the third world as savage. Now we're starting to understand, perhaps, they have their type of wisdom. Let's not make this religious. This is not about religion. I want you to understand that deeply. This is about the intelligence, a form of intelligence, that modern man tends to overlook. That only people that have the time and money to go on vacation today can still enjoy. Sharpening of the senses through discourse with nature. Dwindling nature. Nature you don't find in Beverly Hills. So here we have our 11,000-year evolution from some high intelligence 10,000, 11,000 years ago. And my point is, this is simply a flash in human evolution. 10,000, 11,000 years in the course of evolution is not a lot of time. That's not your cup of tea. 6,000 years. Whoever stood on the earth before we farmed have genes that are manifesting today, and they're not very different. The point is, we are asking people in modern electro-technical gizmo society to adopt lifestyles that we had many thousands of years doing very much the opposite of. Well, that's not big news. Not really. But watch where we go. Watch where we take this. I want you to consider the Vikings. Now, the Vikings in 800 or 900 AD, we know this now. They're even changing the history books, little footnotes. That the Vikings in 800 or 900 AD, I remind you, sailed in boats as sophisticated as any ships that have ever been built. It was the Phoenicians and the Vikings. And both those ships represented advancements in sailing technology that even today we're in awe of. And they hit Newfoundland. They hit Canada in 800 AD. I want you to get a sense. Have you ever been out in the ocean in a boat? Think of that experience, your first experience on the open sea. Kind of puts you in a different place, doesn't it? Some of you can't do it. Some of you are phobic about it. Can you imagine people that would go out on a boat for months in the middle of oceans? In their case, not blatantly being told they were going to fall off the earth. Remember, in 800 AD, the earth was flat, and if you sailed out far enough, you'd fall off. I can't imagine what mistakes we're making today that are just the same, but in a different generation. But in 800 AD, to go out there in relatively small ships and sail the open seas and look into the dark nights, waves 100 feet high, not knowing where you're going, but knowing you're going to get there. I ask you, what kind of people were capable of doing that? What kind of people? Have you ever heard of a dolmen? Look up the word dolmen. D-O-L-M-E-N. Dolmen. You know, when Julius Caesar went north, he ran into these guys. Southern Germany, parts of England, these types. Wasn't technically the Vikings, but guys like the Vikings. And Pliny, another Roman historians of the time, all wrote down about the same thing. It's at this point that Caesar decided, and again, Caesar knew how to fight. Caesar's military models were, at the time, renowned and successful, obviously. But when he met these guys and looked into their eyes, it's written everywhere in history that he said, it's time to turn around. There's something about this that tells me we got to come back. I think he learned from Alexander. Alexander didn't quite have that discretion at the time, years earlier. He paid the price. But Caesar understood the look in their eye. That is the same look that the Vikings honed, developed, modeled, remodeled as they sailed across the sea. In Norway, in Sweden, in Denmark, are something called dolmens, D-O-L-M-E-N-S, dolmens. A dolmen is a mound of rock put in certain places strategically based upon dowsing. Dowsing. Yes, that very unscientific ability to douse. To find water, we douse. Dowsing, well within and strong within Christian populations in England and Scotland for many hundreds of years. Well, the Vikings understood that in certain parts of Norway and Denmark, if you put your farm there, your farm would fail. If you put your settlement there, your settlement would fail. And when it came time to move, which they did very often, each time you moved, you had to go through the whole thing again. So they got very good at sensing something that was coming off the earth. That sensing of what was coming off the earth was the same sensing they were using as they crossed the sea. And this was so institutional within the culture that today we still have, resurrected in certain places, dolmens, mounds of rock that are supposed to offset the magnetic fields of the earth for the betterment and prosperity of the culture. Do you think that people like that could be walking around today? Blonde-haired, blue-eyed, a fire coming through their eyes like burning lights. Not quite sure of where they are. Not quite sure of what to do. Medicated, depressed, intermixed with moments of mania. Because to sail the open seas is to, in a sense, be manic. What we call, so I'm going to take a jump here, manic depression. What we call manic depression might just be, and I'll give you other examples. We're not talking about the Scandinavians only. We're talking about the Celts, the Saxons, the Teutons, the Huns, the American Indians, the Eskimos. We have tribes all over the world, every continent. And as the ecosystems disappear, they're trying to box themselves in increasingly to lifestyles that began as little as 1,000 years ago or as long as 10,000 years ago into these electronic lifestyles. How do you put a Viking, I ask you, in front of a computer for 60 hours a week? How does that occur? I guess now I'll tell you the story. Years ago, a man that walked into my office, he was about 6'9". Same blue eyes. First thing I said to myself is, that's a Viking. You know, I could have put the helmet on right then and there. And he sat down on a chair, unfortunately, that was way too small for his body. He'd come to California all the way from Kansas. And I opened his chart and I looked at it, and there he was on 9 antidepressants. 9. It's a true story. And I said to him, first thing, first 5 minutes, I said, buddy, listen, there's nothing wrong with you. I said, you're a Viking. I said, what are you doing selling insurance in a landlocked state like Kansas when you're supposed to be out in the middle of the ocean? And I kid you not, that man began to weep. He wept. He wept uncontrollably. He continued weeping. There was a point when I thought he was going to have a seizure. But I hit it. I did it. I tapped that part of him that still existed that knew truth. I mean, why else would a guy fly 2,000 miles to California from Kansas? That's one of a bunch of stories like that. I get them all the time. Some of you understand what I'm talking about. I guarantee you. And I want you to get on the website, straighttalk.cc. I want you to comment. You see? We're in a relationship. You have to understand that. I'm listening to you. You're communicating with me. And this dialogue's been going back and forth now for 16, 17 months. So I'm starting to see who's and what's listening. So I know you're out there. But keep the flow. Keep the flow coming and going. And make sure you tell your friends. Because as you can tell, I think still this is the only show, the only radio show there is that just goes with it. There's no advertising. There's no selling. There's nothing. It just talks. And I have that privilege. StraightTalk.cc. So this Viking is weeping uncontrollably on 9 antidepressants. How different is he than the American Eskimo? I was going to bring a woman on the show today. I think I'm going to do it another day. She's healing gangrene beautifully. She's up there with the Eskimos. She teaches Eskimos. And I listen to her stories about these tribes of people who for thousands of years have lived a certain way, who drink hot chocolate and Cocoa Puffs and Coca-Cola and get hyperglycemic. And they're only 15. And they can't handle these sugars. And they resent the people that have come to their lands and made them give up the old traditions. It's not a friendly place in that sense. But I'm interested as a doctor, a scientist, a medical anthropologist. So I talk to people living up there. And each year they go and they hunt the bowtie whale, bowhead. They kill a whale. And I saw pictures of this big, big, beautiful whale being cut up. And they feed the rest of it to the polar bears. And they do this as a ritual with deep respect. Deep respect for their culture and for nature. In such a beautiful way. And they eat the fat raw, or they cook it. They eat the meat. You can see the skeleton of the whale. People take part in it. And then the next day they go to school and drink Coca-Cola. In 200 years, if these people are down in L.A., what do you think their physical experience is going to be? What do you think their psychological experience is going to be? Do you think they'll have diabetes? Do you think they'll have heart disease? Do you think they'll have cancer? Do you think they should go vegetarian? You see, we have to respect our genetics, our hunter-gatherer roots, some more than others. Some of us retain more of this than others. And hopefully, before this show is over, you're going to know who you are. How much of this is still operating within you? Because it will explain much of where you've been, who you are, and where you need to go. This is medicine. This should be on your physical exams. It really should. On the physical exam, this should be a question. How much of you still resonates with your tribe? How's that for a different worldview? Crazy, huh? Nonsense. Not scientific. Absolutely stupid. Studies just don't back that suggestion up. There's nothing to call for this, they would say. And yet, what about that Eskimo in 200 years living in Los Angeles? Reading the China study. Yes, the China study, that work of high intelligence, high scientific wisdom, telling us not to eat meat because we're going to get heart disease. And you tell that to an Eskimo kid in 200 years. That's good science. Medical anthropology, that's bad science. See, we've made a bunch of mistakes. Not respecting these traditions is one of them. But it's not just Eskimos, and it's not just Vikings. Did you ever look into the eye of an angry Scotsman? Years ago, I worked in restaurants in New York City. I was in my teens. I wanted to get behind the bar and do those exciting things that any young man would want. And I remember one night, a man in a kilt, a dress, came in with bagpipes and one of those caps that the Scots wear. This was up on 2nd Avenue and 88th Street, in Yorkville. It was a bar that went back to 1620. It's called Cronies, 88th and 2nd. And I can remember this Halloween night, this guy comes in and, you know, he's wearing a kilt, which if you were ignorant in New York, looked like a dress. And someone made the hard mistake. This man must have been about 70 years old. Blue eyes, fire coming through them. There I was at 19, underage, tending bar. Knowing that there could be a war at any time. I mean, that's what happens in bars, Halloween. And I remember somebody making the mistake of telling this 70-year-old man, and he was fully a 70-year-old man, some ethnic slur about the dress. And I remember watching this man's arm reach across the bar, this big, long arm with a forearm the size of a thigh, grasping this poor person that made this mistake around the neck and lifting the person up, squeezing the man's neck with his forearm, just his forearm, and literally his drink in the other hand. And I remember watching this guy that made the insult stammer something out about an apology. Then I remember watching the Scotsman put this guy down. And nobody said anything. And everybody just pretended like it didn't happen. And check the Weston Price, article within the last few months on what medical history says of the Scots, of the Highlanders, in battle. Look it up. Lots of homework today. Smithsonian.com, NationalGeographic.com, Göbekli Tepe, and then go to the Weston Price Institute, one of their last periodicals, something within the last 4 to 6 months on the Highlanders. And medical history, always being in awe of the strength of these people. The point being, the Scotsman had retained his connection to the primal diet, to the fish, to the meat, to the salt, to the dairy. Other than the oats, it was a low-grain society. And this unbelievable ability they had. But my point to you is that there was always fire in their eyes. You can tell this when you look in someone's eyes. I'm not going to be political, but I have to tell you something, because this is so close to you each and every day, but you don't see it. The presidential debates, I want you to go on YouTube, and we're not being political. Let me make that clear. No commentary. But, I want you to look at Mitt Romney's eyes during the debate. Now, yes, he had the smile, but I want you to look at his eyes. And I want you to get a sense of what I'm talking about when I talk about the tribe. Because whatever was coming off that man in that debate was the best of him. And whether you think he won or he lost is absolutely irrelevant. The politics to this statement are absolutely irrelevant. But we would all agree whatever was coming across through that man's eyes had power. And it helped him. It brought out the best of him. That is the tribe. Now, he's had a successful life. What I'm trying to say is that those eyes, they're wild. Some would call them menacing. Not his, but eyes like that. They're wild eyes. Schwarzenegger. There's another one. The tribe expresses strong in his eyes. These are aggressive people that know how to get a job done. Right or wrong, let's not get into that. But I'm talking to you about a constitutional type in our culture. If you've got tribe in you, and again, you're evolving a sense of who you are. Maybe you have a lot, maybe you have a little bit. We're going to get into that. But if you've got enough of it in you, it's got to express to your advantage, or it's to your disadvantage. Politics aside, whatever Schwarzenegger has done on many levels has expressed creatively. The same with Romney. Not so much for the Viking in my office on 9 antidepressants. Do you get my point? Because I have scores of you come in to my places regularly. And you are from the tribe. If you have American Indian in you, one of the most powerful, prolific tribes the world has ever known. I think of this. You know, the Eskimo is one thing. The Eskimo is up there. The Viking is up there, almost at the tundra. That's rough. The Bushman in the desert, that's rough. But think of the American Indian. Only 500, 600, 1,000 years ago, in the most fertile geographic, in the most fertile latitude on the planet. Think of that. Think of the opportunity a culture would have. Farming? Why farm when the soil's so absolutely supportive of everything else? Again, Jared Diamond, I've mentioned this before on my show on animal protein and the benefits, but Jared Diamond, geographer, anthropologist, physiologist, Pulitzer Prize winner, won the Pulitzer for Guns, Germs, and Steel. National Geographic picked up Guns, Germs, and Steel, the book, after he had the Pulitzer, made an award-winning documentary out of it. He wrote a book called The Third Chimpanzee. Chapter 8 of this book, Agriculture's Mixed Blessings. The American Indian stayed hunter-gatherer. Do you know where the hunter-gatherer also prospered? California. Look at California. Think of California, the breadbasket of the world. 500, 600, 700 years ago. The stories that come off the island of Manhattan 500 or 600 years ago. You could hardly believe your ears. Hunter-gatherer existences because there was so much fertility. So many of you come from tribes, the Teutons. Have you ever heard of the Black Forest of Germany? People that live in the Black Forest. Have you ever been to the Black Forest? These were the people who the Roman legions, thousands of years ago, stood eye to eye with and turned around and said, I don't think we're going to go this far. Well, actually, they messed with the Teutons. The Teutonic tribes and the Romans went at it. But Caesar went at it with great caution. And when he went further, that's when he turned around. Enough was enough. The Teutons, the Vikings, the American Indians, the Welsh, the Highlanders of Scotland, the Hungarians, the Czechoslovakians. You're out there. And you may not be integrating into the electrotechnical world. Without understanding this, without guidance, without really making that leap into finding out who you are and how you're supposed to live, you may be that Viking in front of a computer and a TV set in a crowded cubicle with a cell phone plugged to your ear or another electronic gizmo around your head, an electronic car, electric blanket turned on, hot seat of the car turned on, sedentary instead of like it was before the wife and kids. And you may be crumbling. And ladies, it's just the same. Yeah, you didn't go out on the sea, but you had your tribal ways of balancing your nervous system. So I'm going to ask you to consider, to the extent that you resonate with this, I'm going to ask you to consider the repercussions, the backlashes to our inherent cell biology, our inherent physiology, and the pathology that results, meaning the chronic industrial disease state, how the modern lifestyle has cost us health. How that projects into your manic depressive state. Because a manic depressive state is a Viking without a coastline. It's a Maasai without a grassland. It's an Eskimo without an igloo. It's a southern Italian without a mountainside. But I'm going somewhere in this discussion today. I'm going somewhere. I'm going to herbal medicine. I'm going to the roots of these so-called holistic traditions. Because at the roots of these traditions, they're most fundamentally pathways to the conversion of the dream into the reality. So we're taking a big leap. And you hunter-gatherers, you tribes people, in disguise nonetheless, need to understand this. Because your dreams suffer more than anybody. You're not being given the pathway to turn your dreams into reality. You owned it at one time. You had it at one time. Your pathway has been taken away. And I'll define that. But more than anything, holistic medicine in its root, in its essence, was supposed to be the pathway, the guy in the tribe, most communing with nature and all the things out of nature, was the guy that led the tribe. He wasn't the general. He didn't go out and fight the fight. He may not have been the lead hunter. He may not have been the guy to settle the disputes. But he was the guy who communed with nature to give guidance to the leader of the tribe. So you have to understand now this rivetingly important concept. You have to understand that tribal medicine existed to give guidance to people who had most connection with nature to the way the tribe made their decisions, from political to social, on all levels. We have to understand it that way today. Because holistic medicine is supposed to get you in touch with you. And I think predominantly it's doing a less than okay job. If chiropractors are just cracking, and acupuncturists are just sticking needles, and nutritionists are just dispensing with herbs, not that these things don't have their place. But if that's all they're doing, and we're umbrellaing all of this under the term holistic medicine, we're missing the point. This is not a criticism. Holistic medicine in this country, unfortunately, we have the freedom to pursue it. But it's young in its evolution. The upgrade is to understand this. But you know, upgrades are interesting. If you study the history of the upgrade, it's never your colleagues. Study the history of any upgrade. It's always you, the public. See, the public knows the truth. This is called faith in the common man. This is what our politicians, if they understand it, become great politicians. At the end of the day, you simply kick back and say, of the two politicians, who's the one I'd like to sit down and have a beer with? That's what you say. Polls and people that study these things always take it down to that. And then there's an intellectual perception that says, well, that's stupid. But it's not stupid. Because what it's really saying is, can you find commonality with the people that you're talking to? And that's just an American euphemism. Maybe in Mongolia, it's can you sit down with your fellow politician and drink fermented yak milk? You see? So herbal medicine, holistic medicine, asks you to learn the pathway to conversion of the dream into reality. And no matter how late in life That pathway makes the wrong things right and still allows a possibility for the dreams you still have to come true. And when we taste a little bit of this, we call that mania. And when we get trapped in the conversion of it and stuck, we call that depression. And really, metaphorically, and you'll get the point. Now, the Viking, without his ship, is going to go into mania when he tastes it, and terrible depression when he's locked, landlocked. That's big. So, what's the point here now? What does this come down to? In nature, your sensitivities, the eyes, the ears, the nose, touch, the sixth sense, the intuitive faculty. It's not just table talk. Yes, I'm intuitive. Yes, I feel my way. No, you see, your life depends on it out there in nature. When you're facing 100-foot waves, your life depends on your sixth sense. And that intuitive faculty that's born out of it is continually being refined. And let's get down to it. The act of visualization. You hear, you use your ears. And it begs the question, what are you hearing? That's a visualization. You see. What are you seeing? That is a visualization. You smell. What are you smelling? What's that smell before you see it? That's a visualization. And then you feel. You sense. What are you sensing? What are you feeling? That is a visualization. The act of transforming the senses into the visual is the hunter-gatherer. The act of transforming the senses from Göbekli Tepe to Stonehenge to the Vikings to the American Indian. The act of transforming the senses into the visual is the hunter-gatherer. The hunter-gatherer, that lifestyle refined those senses. Therefore, they refined the act of visualization. That's not what modern electrotechnical man is doing. That's not what the shift to agrarianism accomplished. That's not what living a life where we're being continually asked to dull our senses. After you've been genetically selected over thousands of years to have your senses and intuitive faculties heightened and sharpened as tools for prosperity. You know, the Vikings wanted to get across the Atlantic. That's called prosperity. Bring back food or gold or whatever. There's always this understanding of use the senses, create the visualization, sharpen the intuitive faculties, and prosper. Now, how can you, be successful when so much of modern culture is inadvertently, or sometimes deliberately, telling you to do the opposite? How are you going to achieve your potential? And isn't that a way to look at the manic, depressive personality? Isn't this exciting? This is exciting. This is why this topic should be on your physical exam at Kaiser. They ought to test you to see how much of your intuitive faculty and how much of your tribal tendencies demand satisfaction. That's really where it is. Perhaps all the people who listen and who are into holistic medicine are more like this. Perhaps that what that means. Perhaps when you say you're listening to your body, you're passing on a tradition from your tribe. People listen to a show like this, and then I hear things like, yeah, but you didn't tell me what to do now. You see, this is an interesting statement. So what are you to do? You're supposed to ask yourself how much of this topic is you. If you've just done that, you've done what you're supposed to do. Because how much of you resonates with this topic? How much of you allows this to sink as deeply into you as you can comprehend? And then you just let it flow. The minute you want the cookbook answer, okay, we've now defined your primal genetics. And tomorrow you get up in the morning and you do this, and then you do that, and then you do this and do that. This cookbook sort of recipe is not what it's about. It doesn't work that way. What you're being asked to do here in the confine of this show is not to go out and build an igloo or get in a small yacht and cross the Pacific. What you're being asked to do is just sit with this and let it sink into the marrow of your bone. Let it consume you. And then you're being asked to tell all your friends about the show. Don't forget that part. But the point is, this is a resonant conceptual idea here. This is not a cookbook, because you are not a cookbook. This is the kind of thing that you sit with. And then, okay, you make a list for yourself. And every single day, you put something down on that list that brings you a little closer to you, to the raw, ingenuous, primal you, to the real you. I guarantee you, a lot of you will be throwing away your platform shoes. And I don't think you're going to find much use for nylon and spandex. I think a lot more of you are going to want to put your feet in the earth instead of into tight shoes that don't fit anyway. But you're you, I'm me, and this is a guideline to ignite whatever intuitive faculty still operates within you. So maybe you're going to be around more wood. Maybe you're going to move to Canada. Maybe you're going to buy a smaller house on bigger land instead of a bigger house crammed next to your neighbor. Now, I understand in Beverly Hills that many of those people have two or three or four homes. And some of those homes are on hundreds of acres. Well, that's one thing. But if you're going to buy one home and you have a choice, think about a smaller house with more land than a bigger house for a million or two or three, or whatever puts you in bankruptcy. And then looking out your window and seeing your neighbor accidentally walking around in their house. You know, those sights you don't really want to see, because you bought the house 9 feet away from the bedroom of the guy that lives next to you. And you didn't have to live in an apartment. Some people have to live in apartments. If you're living in an apartment, you've got someone on the top, the bottom, and on our four walls. So we may have evolved not to live like ants. It's just a chance. And you might start thinking about that. And that might mean a better apartment, a guest house. You may go buy a yurt, a tent, and go find some campsite somewhere. You may move to another state. I don't know what you'll do. Neither do you. But that's the fun of it. You're going to put it out there. But what you're going to understand is this. on another list. You put those symptoms down. You know, those headaches and the backache, the digestive problems, and your manic depressive tendencies, and your knee pain, your heart disease, and this and that and the other thing, and all your vices or things that you really don't want to do, but you just give in and do them anyway, cigarettes, booze, pot, sugar, whatever it is. And I want you to weigh one list against the other. That's what you do. Because as you weigh one list against the other list, what you're going to find is that as the primal list, the hunter-gatherer list grows, it's going to be easier to shrink the vice list. Most importantly, what you're going to realize is your tendencies to sympathetic dominant existences, your tendency to be in sympathetic dominance. Boy, if I only had a way of knowing how many people who are listening today, the hundreds of people that are listening today, how many of you really understand sympathetic dominance and what the shift to parasympathetic dominance feels like? Would you do me a favor? Would you send straighttalk.cc on the comment section? Tell me you know or you have no clue. And if you have no clue, listen to more of my shows. But if you've listened to more of my shows, if you've been on the website, if you've bought the subscription, then simply come to my school then. We've got a few spaces left for next Sunday. Come to the school. You got to get this down. And I keep missing it sometimes because, to me, I've repeated it so many times. But you see, what I've learned is you've got to experience these things in your body or they still don't sink in. So I don't really know how many of my listening audience has had the feeling of shifting from the stress-related sympathetic nervous system to the parasympathetic one. I'll tell you how you sustain the stress. Dull your senses. When we dull our senses, we go into sympathetic dominance. And when we start getting connected to our senses through the Earth's biofields, through the medium of nature, we begin to come to life. And all your organ systems put your chemistry together correctly. This is a far cry from thinking you're going to heal that symptom with an herb. I am Dr. Vincent Medici. Hope you enjoyed the show. StraightTalk.cc. Get to the website. Call Annika 310-320-1132 for the school next week. Ciao, ciao.
Dr. Medici through his website, StraightTalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. And the best part? You can call in live with your health questions every week. For those of you still holding for Dr. Medici, stay on hold. He'll continue to answer calls for as long as it takes. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. And remember, to contact his office for an appointment, call Rachel or Johanna at 310-320-1132. That's 310-320-1132. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.